So this poem is called Galileo, Someone Like You by Declan O'Rourke. Galileo fell in love as a Galilean boy, and he wondered what in heaven who invented such a joy. But the question got the better of his scientific mind, and to his blind and dying gaze he looked up high and often sighed and sometimes cried. Who puts the rainbow in the sky? Who lights the stars at night? Who dreamt up someone so divine, someone like you, and made them mine? Love can make you ask some funny questions now and then, but just remember the alternatives, for I remember when I was lonely and unhappy, and my lips were cold as ice, but you kissed me. Good heavens, now I'm here in paradise. So if ever I'm not kissing you or looking in your eyes, I won't be blind and I won't cry. I look up high and gladly sigh and thank the guy who puts the rainbow in the sky, who lights the stars at night, who dreamt up someone so divine, someone like you, and made them mine.
Thanks a million, Jude. And next up, we'll have Cal Doyle, please.
Misprint in the New York Times, so the poem is kind of encoded with indeterminacy and hybridization. And I'd like to dedicate my reading to Eustace McNally, my friend. The man moth. Here, above, cracks in the buildings are filled with battered moonlight. The whole shadow of man is only as big as his hat. It lies at his feet like a circle for a doll to stand on, and he makes an inverted pin, the point magnetized to the moon. He does not see the moon. He observes only her vast properties, feeling the queer light on his hands, neither warm nor cold, of a temperature impossible to record in thermometers. But when the man moth pays his rare, although occasional, visits to the surface, the moon looks rather different to him. He emerges from an opening under the edge of one of the sidewalks and nervously begins to scale the faces of the buildings. He thinks the moon is a small hole at the top of the sky, proving the sky quite useless for protection. He trembles, but must investigate as high as he can climb. Up the facades, his shadow dragging like a photographer's cloth behind him, he climbs fearfully, thinking that this time he will manage to push his small head through that round, clean opening and be forced through, as from a tube, in a black scroll on the light. Man, standing below him, has no such illusions. But what the man moth fears most he must do, although he fails, of course, and falls back scared but quite unhurt. Then he returns to the pale subways of cement he calls his home. He flits, he flutters, and cannot get aboard the silent trains fast enough to suit him. The doors close swiftly. The man moth always seats himself facing the wrong way, and the train starts at once at its full, terrible speed, without a shift in gears or a gradation of any sort. He cannot tell the rate at which he travels backwards. Each night he must be carried through artificial tunnels and dream recurrent dreams. Just as the ties recur beneath his train, these underlie his rushing brain. He does not dare look out the window for the third rail. The unbroken draft of poison runs there beside him. He regards it as a disease he has inherited the susceptibility to. Sorry. He has to keep his hand in his pockets, as others must wear mufflers. if you catch him, hold up a flashlight to his eye. It's all dark pupil, an entire night itself, whose haired horizon tightens as he stares back and closes up the eye. Then from the lids, one tear, his only possession, like the bee sting, slips. Slyly he pans it, and if you're not paying attention, he'll swallow it. However, if you watch, he'll hand it over, cool as from underground springs and pure enough to drink. Thank you.
What a poem. What a poet. And to follow that up, please, Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Billy. This is a poem by Robin Robertson, who I just heard in UCC a few nights ago. And he read this as the last poem. It's called At Rowan Head. And just to realize that Selkies are not just female, that might help when deciphering the poem. You'd know her house by the drawn blinds, by the cormorants pitched on the boundary wall, the black crosses of their weedens hung out to dry. You'd tell it by the quicken and the pine that hid it from the sea and from the brief light of the sun, and by Angus the collie lying at the door where he died, a rack of bones like a sprung trap. She'd had four sons, I knew that well enough, and each one wrong. All born blind, they say, slack-jawed and simple, web-footed, rickety as sticks, beautiful faces, I'm told, though blank as air. Someone saw them once outside, hurtling, drawn to the shore, chittering like rats, and said they were fine swimmers, but I would have guessed at that. Her husband left her, said they couldn't be his. They were more fish than human, said they were beglamoured, and searched their skin for showing marks. 5 years she tended each difficult flame, their tight, flickering bodies. Each night she closed the scales of their eyes to smoor the fire. Until he came again the last time, thick with drink, saying he'd had enough of this, all this witchery, and made them stand in a row by their beds, twitching. Their hands flapped, herring-eyed, rolled in their heads. He went along the line, relaxing them one after another with a small knife. It said, she goes out every night to lay blankets on the graves that keep them warm. It would put the heart across you, all that grief. There was a otter worrying in the leaves, a heron lying low over the waters when I came at scratch of day back to her door. She'd hung four stones in a necklace, wore four rings on the hand that led me past the room, the four small candles burning. She called it the room of rain. Milky smoke poured up from the grate, like a waterfall in reverse. And she said my name. And it was the only thing she said, and the last that she said. She gave me a skylark's egg in the bed of frost, gave me twists of my four sons' hair, gave me her husband's head in a wooden box. Then she gave me the seal skin, and I put it on.
Thank you.
Redberry in fairness. Simon?
Hi, this is a poem by Ted Hughes. Some have called Ted Hughes the English Seamus Heaney. Now, I don't think this is a typical poem of his. I quite like it. And Ted Hughes was, of course, married to the incredibly talented Sylvia Plath. The poem is called The Vampire. You hosts are almost glad he'd get crashed. See how his eyes brighten on the whiskey. How his wit tumbles the company like a lightning stroke. You marvel where he gets his energy from. But that same instant, here, far underground, this fusty carcass stirs its shroud and swells. Stop! Stop! Oh, for God's sake, stop! You shriek as your tears run down, but he goes on and on. Mercilessly, till you think your ribs must crack. While this carcass's eyes grimace, stitched by the cramp of an ordeal, and a squeeze of blood crawls like scorpions into its head. You plead, limp, dangling in his mad voice, till with a sudden, blood-spittling cough, he chokes. He leaves. Trembling soon after, you slump back down in a chair, cold as a leaf, your heart scarcely moving. Deep under the city's deepest stone, this grinning sack is bursting with your blood.
Thanks, Simon. And we're going to have Dean Brown. No? And that's going to be followed by Bernadette for 30 seconds. So you can prepare yourself. If I can remember it, I'm going to read a poem called An Encounter, which is my favourite poem by Robert Frost. Once on the kind of day called Weather Breeder, when the heat slowly hazes and the sun by its own power seems to be undone, I was half climbing through, half boring through a swamp of cedar, choked by oil of cedar and scurf of plants, and weary and overheated, and sorry I ever left the road I knew. I paused and rested on a sort of hook that had me by the coat as good as seated. And since there was no other way to look, looked up toward heaven, and there against the blue stood over me a resurrected tree, a tree that had been down and raised again, a barkless spectre. He had halted too, as if for fear of treading upon me. I saw the strange position of his hands, up at his shoulders, dragging yellow strands of wire with something in it from men to men. You here? I said. Where aren't you nowadays? And what's the news you carry, if you know? And tell me where you're off for. Montreal. Me? I'm not off for anywhere at all. Sometimes I wander out of beaten ways, half looking for the orchid Calypso. Good man, Dean. Bernadette?
I wish I could
remember a poem like that. This is just one section of a very long poem by Augustus Young, a native of Cork. It was written in the 60s, and he versified Thackeray, the writer of Vanity Fair, his Irish sketchbook about his travels in Ireland. So this section is about Father Matthew. You know, we all know him from your Marks and Spencers and Hannah. So, Theobald Matthew, temperance leader. The ladies love him, this good priest, stoutly handsome, with not the least trace of draconian demeanour expected of a temperance wiener. No small beer, almost a week, views moderate, a listener who chews common sense. Not given to preach, we had tea with him, one cup each. Thanks.
So, Afric, if you want to be on standby there, but we're going to have Seamus Harrington now, please.
Thanks, Billy. Long time ago when I started writing on a blackboard, when I started writing on a blackboard and getting paid for it, I realised you had to be very careful in writing the word no and the word not. Totally different message. Imagine it on a prescription, not to be taken by mouth, and so on. So I thought there might be a poem, but I found this then to my great delight, called Printer's Error by P.G. Woodhouse. I'll skip the last verse because it's a bit long. As o'er my latest book I pored, enjoying it immensely, I suddenly exclaimed, "Good Lord!" and gripped the volume tensely. "Golly," I cried, "I writhed it in pain. They've done it on me once again." And furrows creased my brow. I'd written, which I thought quite good, "Root ripening into womanhood," was now a girl who knocked men flat and frequently got whistled at. And some vile, careless, casual gook had spoiled the best thing in the book by printing not, yes not, great Scott, when I had written no. On murder in the first degree, the law I knew is rigid, its attitude, if A kills B, to A is always frigid. It counts it not a trivial slip if on behalf of authorship you liquidate compositors. This kind of conduct it abhors and seldom will allow. Nevertheless, I deemed it best and in the public interest to buy a gun, to oil it well, inserting what is called a shell, and go and pot with sudden shot this printer who had printed not when I had written no. I tracked the bounder to his den through private information. I said, "Good afternoon," and then explained the situation. "I'm not a fussy man," I said. "I smile when you put red for red and bad for bed and oh for head and bunch instead of bow and one appears instead of wine. Are you altar cone to shine? I never make a row. I know how easy errors are. But this time you have gone too far by printing not when you what? When you knew what I really wrote was no. Prepare," I said, "to meet your God. Or, as you'd say, you'll go, or bod, or possibly you'll go." A few weeks later into court, I came to stand my trial. The judge was quite a decent sort. He said, "Well, cocky, I'll be passing sentence in a jiff, and so, my poor unhappy stiff, if you have anything to say, now is the moment, fire away." "You have," I said, "and how? My lord, the facts I don't dispute. I did, I own it freely, shoot this printer through the collar stud. What else could I have done, my love? He'd printed not." The judge said, "What? When you had written no? God bless my soul, gadzooks," says he, "the blighter once did that to me. A dirty trick, I trow. I hereby quash and override the juridic's verdict." "Gosh," he cried, "give me your hand." "Yes, I insist. A splendid fellow. Case dismissed." Cheers and a voice. Wow, wow.
African Mulinji.
This is a bit of brand. of choice, but I like it because it shows that there are always two points of view, or, you know, two perspectives on any situation. So this is called There Are Birds Here by Jamal May, and it's for Detroit. There are birds here. So many birds here is what I was trying to say when they said those birds were metaphors for what is trapped between buildings and buildings. No, the birds are here to root around for bread the girls' hands tear and toss like confetti. No, I don't mean the bread is torn like cotton. I said confetti. And no, not the confetti a tank can make of a building. I mean the confetti a boy can't stop smiling about. And no, his smile isn't much like a skeleton at all. And no, his neighborhood is not like a war zone. I'm trying to say his neighborhood is as tattered and feathered as anything else, as shadow pierced by sun and light parted by shadow dance as anything else. But they won't stop saying, how lovely the ruins, how ruined the lovely children must be in that birdless city.
Colm Scully, please. And Rab, you're on next, if you want to
put it together.
This is, Everybody Makes Poets by Ogden Nash. Poets aren't very useful because they aren't very consumeful or very produceful. Even poets of great promise don't contribute much to trade and commerce, to which indeed even poets of great achievement are a positive bereavement, because they aren't very sensible, because they think buying and selling are cheap and lousy and reprehensible. And this is a topic about which poets are people who really cannot tell anything, because they are people who cannot afford to buy anything and are seldom glib enough to sell anything. Some poets are bitter, but they are preferable to the poets who are all over Twitter. But even the poets who are all over Twitter are as dependable as Rotary, compared to what each of them has around him, which is a rapturous quarterly. Because every poet is constantly threatened by one disaster, which is that a lot of otherwise thwarted male and female ladies will go around calling him master. And then there is nothing to do but surrender. And then it is goodbye old poetry, hello old theosophy and gender. And yet, on the other hand, if a poet isn't fed by a lot of male and female ladies who are affected, why, until long after he is dead or gets the Pulitzer Prize, why, he is neglected. So my advice to mothers is, if you are the mother of a poet, don't gamble on the chance that future generations will crown him. Follow your original impulses and draw him.
Rob Urquhart, ladies and gentlemen.
A couple of verses from the Tao Te Ching. From verse 11, 30 spokes will converge in the hub of a wheel, but the use of the cart will depend on the part of the hub that is void. With a wall all around, a clay bowl is moulded, but the use of the bowl will depend on the part of the bowl that is void. Cut out windows and doors in your house as you build, but the use of the space will depend, the use of the house will depend on the space in the walls that is void. So advantage is had from whatever is there, but usefulness arises from whatever is not. Verse 27. A good runner leaves no tracks. A good speech has no flaws to censure. A good computer uses no talent. A good door is well shut without bolts and cannot be opened. A good knot is tied with a rope and cannot be loosed. The wise man is always good at helping people so that none are cast out. He is always good at saving things so that none are thrown away. This is called applied intelligence. Surely the good man is the bad man's teacher, and the bad man is the good man's business. If the one does not respect his teacher, or the other doesn't love his business, his error is very great. This is indeed an important secret.
Thanks, Rob. Profound. Michael Ray, please.
Okay, this is by Tony Hoagland. What narcissism means to me. There's socialism and communism and capitalism, said Neil. And there's feminism and hedonism. And there's Catholicism and bipedalism and consumerism. But I think narcissism is the system that means the most to me. And Sylvia said that in Neil's case, narcissism represented a heroic achievement in positive thinking. And Anne, who calls everybody sweetie pie, whether she cares for them or not, Anne lit a cigarette and said, only miserable people will tell you that love has to be deserved. And when I heard that, a distant chime went off for me, remembering a time when I believed that I could simply live without it. Neil had grilled the corn and sliced the onions into thick white discs and piled the wet green pickles up in stacks like coins, and his chef's cap was leaning sideways like a mushroom cloud. Then Ethan said in his opinion, if you're going to mess around with self-love, you shouldn't just rush into a relationship. And Sylvia was weeping softly now, looking down into her wine cooler and potato chips. And then the hamburgers were done, just as the sunset in the background started cutting through the charcoal clouds, exposing their insides. Black, streaked, dark red, like a slab of scorched rare steak, delicious but unhealthy. Or, depending on your perspective, unhealthy but delicious. The way that deep inside the misery of daily life, love lies bleeding.
Thanks, William Michael. Patricia Watts, please.
Tonight is a translation of an Anglo-Saxon poem, and by Anglo-Saxon I mean about 7th or 8th century, and I'm not going to inflict the original Old English on you, but I will do a translation. It is to my people as if someone gave them tribute. If you come through a troop, they'll definitely kill them. Alas, we are divided. Whoops on one island, I on another. That island surrounded by fens is secure. There are on the island of bloodthirsty men. If it comes to a troop, it'll definitely kill them. Alas, we are divided. I thought my wolf of far wandering hopes. Whenever it's rainy weather, and I sat cheerfully. Whenever the warrior bold in battle encompassed me in his arms. To me it was pleasure, but also grieved me. Wolf, my hopes are your cause, my sickness, your infrequent visits. A mourning heart, not all starvation. Do you hear, Redbacker? A wolf is carrying our witch's wealth to the forest. That one easy sunders, which is never secure, our song together.
Thanks a million, Trish, for taking us back to the origins of the English language. And so we'll have Niall Herriot next, and then Connor Mack, if you're on standby for the aftermath.
This is by Anonymous, pre-Norman invasion. It's called Song of a Hermit. translated by Frank O'Connor, and it's a nature poem. He very cleverly, in the English, translating from the Irish, he very cleverly rhymed this poem. And also, he's just putting three syllables into each, into the second and fourth line of each stanza. It's a bit haiku-like. Song of a Hermit. Yeah, clever fucker that Frank O'Connor. A hidden place, a mossy yew tree is my roof. Nearby, a mighty oak keeps me tempest-proof. I pick my fruit from various bushes. It's my inn. I fill my fists where hazel trees hem me in. A clear well beside me offers healthy drink. There grows a bed of cresses near its brink. A herd of wild goats, friendly neighbors, nestle near. Wild boars roam, a brood of badgers, grazing deer. To what feasts the woods invite me, all about. There are berries, herbs, wild vegetables, crayfish, trout. All one could ask for comfort around me grows, hips and haws, wild strawberries, nuts and sloes. A clutch of eggs, salmon, honey are my meat. Bilberry and whortleberries are my sweet. When summer spreads its mantle, what a sight. Marjoram, sorrel, pignuts, juicy bright. Dainty redbreasts briskly forage every bush. Round and about my hut, their flutters swallow thrush. Black bees, bumblebees, music makers, buzz and hum, geese honk over. Duck in autumn often come. Bussy wren, officious linnet, quiet blackcap, all industrious, and the bright jay's sturdy tap. From sea and lake, gull and heron flapping in. In upland heather rises partridge hen. In the year's most brilliant weather, cattle low through grassland lush. Undriven, unbeaten, tranquil, slow. Through mossy boughs, the wind whispers now. Skies still blue. Foxes call, stream water falling, calling to. Thanks.
Great to have an early English poem countered by an early Irish poem. Great, good man. Conrad Manis, please.
Thanks, Greg. This is a cover version of The Song of Wandering Angus by W.B. Yeats. I went out to the hazel wood. I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head. And cut and peeled a hazel wand and hooked a bird to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout. When I had laid it on the floor and went to blow the fire aflame, something rustled on the floor and someone called me by my name. It had become a glimmering girl with apple blossom in her hair, who called me by my name and ran and faded in the brightening air. Though I am old from wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone, and kiss her lips and take her hands, and walk among long dappled grass, and pluck till time, and pluck, and pluck, and pluck till time, and pluck till time, and pluck till time, and time is done, the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun.
Great cover version. Michel Delay, please.
Seabed for ideas. And I'm no horticulturist, but fill your mind with thoughts of love. I hear it's good for growth. And feel it in your body, the only place to start. Where the buds of new connections bring a warmth to your heart. A strand of positivity that I caught in your eyes. That I knew myself in contact, it made me realize that it's moments of this for which we live. No greater gift could we give. An impulse like a seed from your spine to mine. For the purpose of this exercise, you're the girl and I'm the guy. And together we must try to make a connection. Without it being a reflection of what we hope to see in ourselves. How's the heartache? How's the health? Were they more than just questions? Was that a care or a connection? Are you there or just rendition? When I spoke, did you listen? Or did my words begin to glisten in the light of what you hope to hear? We must act out of love and not of fear.
Thanks, Jill. Anthony.
I'm going to read a poem called The Trees by Philip Larkin. Appropriate for this season, I think. The trees are coming into leaf, like something almost being said. The recent buds relax and spread. Their greenness is a kind of grief. Is it that they are born again, and we grow old? No, they die too. Their yearly trick of looking new is written down in rings of grain. Yet still the unresting castles thresh in full-grown thickness every May. Last year is dead, they seem to say. Begin afresh, fresh, afresh. Thank you.
And we have Kieran McCartan, please.
There's a poem called Diffusing on the show tonight.
We
love just like cheering each other's groupies. We actually didn't go to the anniversary tonight, so yeah, we're going to show the work to me, but.
Whatever, yeah.
It's not Valentine's night,
isn't it? He's kind of feeling
like it, though.
Right on.
We all have our time on the mic.
Just
read it. Diffusing. We haunt a closed restaurant. Diffusing. Spilling into puddles of each other across a plastered ceiling. You engulf a light bulb and its dress, creating chatoyance pointing at the stools soaked in gravity. Gradually, I recall then it soaked you. You too would sit grounded, peering pursed lips into pools of caffeine vaccines, your armor for the day, you'd say, smiling till finally alone, letting milk drops plunge into the black, tunneling down, returning hastily, they marvel their way to the surface, as if to greet you was their purpose, and you, smiling alone, selfishly, keeping ephemeral kicks to yourself. You are milk when you breathe deeply in the bath. And you were a beautiful thing, of blues and greens and whites and red soft. And I might be with you in the morning. And the sun hits your face, meets my eyes hitting yours, and I could be theirs. They are hemispheres full to the brim, and I would live in the empty half of them, diffusing.
Mm. Thanks, Ciarán. And next we'll have Mihal, please.
Robert Frost, Fire and Ice. Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. From what I tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction ice is also great and would suffice. Thank you.
Gormagos, Behil. So we've got three people left, maybe we can get through them all.
Can you make it four?
I'll do my best.
That's fine.
I'll do my best. Lizzie Fallon, please. Oh yeah, Lizzie.
This is called What's So Crazy About Having Waves in Your Veins? It's a poem by Lacey Root. They tell me I can't keep the ocean in my ribs, but I do. Dangerous things out there, but they're the stories of barracuda monsters, octopuses with 15 testicle thingies, whales that will swallow you, and sharks that can't wait to taste a human. But despite all of this, the manatees and mermaids are enough to keep the waves in my veins, so I'm swimming. I got the touch of beautiful women in my shivers. Even though I don't know the meaning of love, I know the feeling of fingers, and that's enough to get me by. In the wind there are words I have a hard time catching, but I'm trying my best to grab them and keep them in my pocket. So when I get home, I'll have more poems to write and stories to tell, because every day is a new chance to look at the same things differently. To stand with no umbrella in the rain, because the rain is just the sky wanting to touch you. Listen to the birds and crickets chirping away, because everything with sound has a song to sing, and anything that breathes has something to say. So listen. Just because the thing called reality tells you that you can't breathe, there is snuggle with clouds, French kissed raindrops, or rough flares in your hands. You can. People told me that I couldn't do a lot of things. I believed them for a while, but I'm doing them now. I'm practicing hugs and handshakes because that's what saves people. I never believed that refraining from cursing or saying your prayers would get you any closer to heaven or any further from hell. Don't be afraid to pull the bricks from your feet and skip to your next location, because the greatest distance, I swear, is still the one within you. Give the fingers to self-preservation and begin to be the thing that you always wanted to be but was too afraid to do. Keep sonnets in your sinews, rest in your lover's whispers, snuggle with change until it becomes your constant. Learn to look at yourself in the mirror at any time of the day and smile, finding that the definition of beauty is in your own reflection. Because in the end, who's to say what is true? Who's to tell you who you should love? Who's to tell you who you should be? Who's to tell you what is real and what to believe? Reality was only created to make another category that would define a certain group of people as crazy. I know what I feel, and I'm beginning to understand who I am. I'm just a girl who keeps the ocean in my ribs and the waves in my veins, despite all of the terrible things that people say it contains. But I think at the end of the day, we are all just swimming.
We are all just swimming, Lizzie. There's no, no gainsaying that one. Next up for her third ever poetry reading tonight, and in the history of the universe, and I need Wade, please.
This poem is called Across a New Dawn, and it's by Kofi Awono, who is a Ghanaian poet who was killed 2 years ago in the terrorist attack in Kenya. Sometimes we read the lines in the green leaf, run our fingers over the smooth of the precious wood from our ancient trees. Sometimes even the sunset puzzles as we look for the lines that propel the clouds, the color scheme with the multiple designs that the first artist put together. But who says our time is up, that the box maker and the digger are in conference, or that the preachers have aired their robes and the choir and the drummers are in rehearsal? No, where the worm eats, a grain grows. The consultant deities have measured the time with long-winded arguments of eternity. And death, when he comes to the door with his own inimitable calling card, shall find a homestead, resurrected with laughter and dance, and the festival of the meat of the young lamb and the red porridge of the new corn. We are the celebrants whose fields were overrun by rogues and other bad men who interrupted our dance with obscene songs and bad gestures. Someone said an ailing fish swam up our lagoon, seeking a place to lay its load in consonance with the original plan. Master, if you can be the oarsman for our boats, please do it, do it. I asked you before, once upon a shore at home, where the seafront has narrowed to the brief space of childhood. We welcome the travelers come home on the new boats, fresh from the upright tree.
What was the name of that poet again?
Kofi Awono.
Kofi Awono. I'm going to check that work out. It's wonderful. Do you want to? Yeah, if you're quick, come on, let's go.
I was looking through a notebook when I was trying to find anything at all I could read that I prefer for now. I found a very short one that I wrote while I was trying to write a different poem entirely. It wasn't working.
So you're not supposed to read your own poems, though.
Am I? That's nice. No, well, then never mind. So. No one told me that part.
What you learned at school?
Okay, a different one entirely. So, what I've got. This is a poem I learned by Michael Rosen when I was five. It was for Fish Matthew. I got first prize in the under six category. Questions by Michael Rosen. This is my only first prize ever that I can remember. I was all downhill from there. Questions by Michael Rosen. I often wonder why all grown-ups say to me, when you were old and 6 foot tall, what would you like to be? I sometimes wonder what they would say if I should ask them all what they would like to be if they were 6 years old and small! There we go.
Fair play. You put the spot for Rosie and the Asian. That's all, brother. Good job. So, to finish tonight, we'll have a John W. Sexton, please.
This is a dead, forgotten woman, Irish poet, Blanid Solkill. She died in 1959. She was 79 years of age. Terranor. I laughed at the lovers I passed, two and two in the shadows. I, solitary as one old horse I saw, alone in the meadows. The lovers, so many I passed, in mute embraces, a roadside flower, joy in the hid places. I wandered sure to notice joy as common as a weed, out of my loneliness wandering, laughing indeed. I loved all the lovers I passed, two and two in the shadows. I, solitary as one old horse, was standing alone in the meadows.